Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast here on a Thursday, a live edition of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So thanks to those of you who are joining us on our YouTube page. Michael Beller, Derek Van Riper here with you. I always gesture like you're acting like you're literally sitting to that direction, Derek. I can't help myself. We're in different cities, different states, but it feels like you're here with me, DVR, and feels like those of you out there listening and watching are here with us as well. Derek, heading into another weekend, our third weekend of the Major League Baseball season. And hey, we're coming off what was nearly a perfect game thrown last night by Carlos Rodon, already our second no-hitter. It's been quite the start to the season thus far.
Yeah, puns were flying too. I think I saw a no-footer out there after Carlos Rodon hit Roberto Perez in the foot in the ninth inning of that perfect game bid. But what a great story. I mean, a guy that's been through a lot with Tommy John surgery, shoulder injuries. I mean, Jason Benetti, of course, on the call, reminded everybody who was tuning in late of all those things. But Rodon looked like early career Rodon from the jump this season. And it was just nice to see it because I didn't expect it given those injuries.
Yeah, right there with you. And speaking of great story, our White Sox beat writer James Fegan crushed his story on Carlos Rodon's no-hitter. So if you haven't checked that out, make some time for that this afternoon. It's a great story written by James. And it also helps us get right into what we're going to be talking about on this Thursday edition of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Of course, we use our Thursdays to mine the great brains of our beat reporters. And we're going to do that with a couple of guys in the AL Central as well this morning, this afternoon, depending on where you are in the country. So first, let's bring on Aaron Gleeman. Aaron, of course, covers the Minnesota Twins for us. Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
You know, we can't really talk about anything with the Twins, Aaron, without starting with Byron Buxton and the way he has gotten off to such a great start this season. Now, of course, he missed both games of the doubleheader yesterday because of an injury, and we're still waiting to see the Twins lineup for Thursday. So we'll just caveat all that with, you know, Buxton's dealing with a little something right now, but when he's been out there, he has been excellent. The Ks are down, tons of red ink on the StatCast page, crushing fastballs, which is something we haven't really seen from him before this season. I mean, to your eyes, what has been different for him other than the bottom line results?
I mean, just the power has been huge. I mean, he's always, I think, had more power than people believed coming up just because he was so fast. And I think people wanted to kind of pigeonhole him into, oh, he's going to be a leadoff guy. He's going to steal bases. He's going to be at the top of the lineup. And he hasn't always had the greatest plate discipline, strikeout to walk ratio. So he hasn't really been a fit in that type of role. Now they've got him batting fourth some days, batting fifth some days. He has batted leadoff a couple times against lefties. But, I mean, just the raw power that he has, he's one of the few people to hit Corbin Burnes this year. He took a 95 on the black outside to right center. He's just crushing pitches. And in talking to him, it's interesting that he feels like the coaching he's getting now from this regime of the Twins is much different, and he just has much more faith in it than the regime that he came up with. And then the other thing that he's talked about is sort of the combination between the experience he's gained, and he's had a lot of struggles, not just with the injuries, but just, you know, chasing sliders in the dirt and struggling to make consistent contact. And the thing he talked about last week when he first was hitting for power this season is I can just sit slider, I can sit changeup, and my hands are so fast that I can then react to fastballs. And that's exactly what he did on that pitch to from Burns that I talked about. And that's kind of changed the game for him a little bit, because in years past, he really struggled with off-speed stuff. Last year, he started crushing sliders. And then, as you pointed out, now this year, he's crushing fastballs again. So he's kind of merged the two approaches that he's had. And I mean, it's been unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by what he's been doing early on. I was definitely more on the side that thought it was going to be speed over power, even in the long run. But Buxton looks stronger, too. He just looks like his upper body in the last 2 years especially has become much stronger than it was when he first came up. So I think that also sort of backs up the power in addition to seeing the red ink all over the StatCast pages. But let's talk about Alex Kirilloff. He got the call for the doubleheader on Wednesday, got sent back to the alternate site after that. We're nearing the point in the calendar where teams can bring prospects up and then keep them up all year and not have them accrue a full year of service time. So that day is, I believe, Saturday, if I counted the days correctly on my fingers recently. What's the role going to look like for Alex Kirilloff when that happens, be it this weekend, early next week, or a week from now?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he had a real legitimate chance to win the job out of spring training. They certainly talked a big game about not making the decision based on service time. Then ultimately he hit like 130 in spring training and he does get sent down. It's hard to know, you know, was it just going to be that way if he hit 330? We'll never know. I'm not entirely sure that he's going to get called up, you know, immediately after the sort of threshold for service time is no longer an issue. Like you said, he was called up yesterday. He played in both games of the doubleheader, went right back to the alternate site. So that adds 1 day of service time. So at least he's got a day of service time now. I think it comes down a lot to the Twins' injury situation, because right now Josh Donaldson just came back yesterday too. If he can stay in the lineup for a while, which has always been a struggle for him, but if he can stay in the lineup at third base, they're going to end up playing Luis Arraez some in left field, although now Andrelton Simmons, their shortstop's out, so Arraez might be needed at second. So I do think Kirilloff will be up, I would say probably by early May, but I'm not 100% sure that it's going to be like, you know, 48 hours after the service time cutoff.
Yeah, let's talk about Luis Arraez for a second, because he was slotted in as the third baseman while Josh Donaldson had been out on the IL. Donaldson comes back on Wednesday, and Andrelton Simmons goes on the COVID IL, so he's going to be out for a while. I mean, clearly this is someone who Rocco Baldelli likes having in the lineup, and with good reason. He's got a 370 OBP in the early going this year, a 364 OBP and 121 plate appearances last year. The season before that, 366 trips to the plate. He hit 334. He had a 399 OBP. I think at this point we can say that the guy can get on base, and that's quite a good trait to have for someone in your regular lineup. So when this team is fully healthy, Donaldson back, Kirilloff up, Andrelton Simmons back, how do they find consistent ABs for Arraez?
It's going to be a challenge, although as someone who's been covering the Twins now, I will tell you that those things tend to solve themselves with the Twins in terms of injuries. But yeah, I mean, I think they've been more and more comfortable playing him in left field. His natural position is second base. He's not amazing there, but he's okay there. He's been playing a lot of third base, like you mentioned, in place of Donaldson. He's actually made some nice plays there. I think those are the three spots that you're going to see him, and then they'll shuffle people kind of around him. But Rocco Baldelli, for the first time this year, has kind of committed to Arraez as the primary leadoff guy. In the past 2 years, it's been Max Kepler, who's a kind of a non-traditional leadoff type. So I think against right-handed pitching, you're going to not only see Arraez in the lineup basically every day, regardless of position, but you're also going to be seeing him leading off, which I think is, you know, it maximizes his value. And I realize fantasy-wise, he's not a guy who's going to steal a lot of bases. I think he maybe, you know, he could hit 5 to 8 homers a year or something like that. But he's just going to be, I'm just so convinced from a plate discipline standpoint, you know, just bat to ball standpoint. I mean, he'll hit 300 every year. I have no doubt about that. So it depends, I guess, a little bit on league formats and that. But I mean, he's definitely the most traditional leadoff type, not only on the Twins, but among the most in the whole league.
I think we could see him at least be useful the same way that David Fletcher is useful to fantasy players, right? Moves around, plays a bunch of different spots. Average floor is extremely high. I keep looking at him when he hits, Aaron. I see a guy that might actually pop 15, maybe 18 home runs in his best seasons because he's still young enough. I think he'd get a little stronger. I think he could actually be one of those guys that gives us one of those unexpected power surges for a year just because he's so good, like bat to ball. When you watch him play, I think he does a lot of things very well. Even running the bases, there are just things that he does. You can tell he understands the game at a very high level. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And I think that's going to just drive him to so much playing time. I really love watching Arias, so I hope we see one more level. But you're probably right. 5 to 8 home runs is a more reasonable expectation with that profile. Let's talk about Alex Colome and this bullpen. Couple saves for Colome so far, but Trevor Rogers has been better to this point. What's going on with this closer situation? We're always looking for saves in the fantasy community. I think people expected at least a split of some kind between Colome and Rogers going into the year, but could it be even messier than that?
I mean, yeah, Colome could be making it messier than that, basically. I mean, Rocco Baldelli definitely does not like to anoint a closer. He's never even officially. Taylor Rogers has been their closer the last 2 years, but he during that time, he never even anointed him. This offseason, even before signing Colome, they said, well, we're not going to have a set closer. They signed Colome, and he's been used, you know, pretty much like a set closer. He's gotten essentially every save chance, and he struggled. He blew a save on opening day through some fielding miscues, and then just this few days ago served up the 3-run homer to Kyle Seager of the Mariners. I think they'll probably scale back his, you know, leverage a little bit, but they're saying all the right things just in terms of, you know, we trust him. We didn't sign him to let him go 3 appearances in here. I think you will see Rogers would probably be the fallback guy just in terms of if they go a week where Colome's maybe working middle relief or something. But I would probably still bet on Colome ending the season with the most saves on the Twins, but it might only be, I don't know, 25 versus, let's say, 10 or 15 for Rogers. And they have guys like Hansel Robles, Tyler Duffy, who could pick up a handful of saves too.
Yeah, Twins definitely not the only team that's going to be spreading the wealth when it comes to the saves department. One more question before we let you go here. Willens Astudillo, obviously someone we love to talk about in the baseball world, in the fantasy baseball world. He has an extra special place in our heart because in most leagues, he's carrying catcher eligibility. And so because of that, we would love to see him get some sort of consistent playing time. We're not asking Rocco Baldelli to trot him out there 6 times a week, but if we could find, you know, 3, 3.5 starts per week for him, he really could be a useful player in the fantasy world because of that catcher eligibility. Is that realistic at all?
I actually think the Twins kind of treat it as a fantasy player would, which is like, it's nice that he's catcher eligible. I don't know that we'll ever play him there, but it's really nice to have that. But I think they're fully convinced, and I sort of am too. It's strange sometimes to watch his at-bats. No one looks worse when they're making outs. But then he'll have these stretches where, you know, he'll go 6 for 10 with a bunch of doubles, and you'll go, this guy can just hit. And he just makes so much contact, and it's not weak contact. And I think Baldelli has shown, especially so far this year, he likes the bat. They don't really trust him anywhere defensively, but he can, you know, hypothetically play anywhere defensively. So he's played some third base, he's played some first base, and he's batted near the middle of the lineup when he's played. So I do think they have the faith in his bat to get him maybe, I don't know, 250 at-bats for the season. I don't see a scenario where he would be playing more than 2 or 3 times a week, because I think even if they were to suffer an injury, they would turn to a prospect type rather than plug him in for more than a week or two.
Definitely love that catcher eligibility in the fantasy world. Hopefully we get to see it deployed for Astudillo at some point this season. That's Aaron Gleeman, our Twins beat writer here at The Athletic. Aaron, thanks so much for taking some time out and joining us this morning.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, Derek, as I said off the top, this is going to be a centrally focused show, right? We just had Aaron Gleeman from the Twins, and now we bring on Cody Stavenhagen, our Tigers beat reporter here at The Athletic. Cody, thanks so much for joining us this morning with the Tigers. Like we talked about with Aaron, can't start the Twins discussion this season without focusing on Byron Buxton. For the Tigers, you can't start a conversation without talking about Akil Baddoo and what this guy has done this season. The results for this point speak for themselves. What I'm wondering is, he's been buried in the bottom third of the lineup, game in and game out, no matter what he's done. And he seems to have carved out pretty regular playing time for himself. Is there any way he could bully his way to the top of the lineup, or is he going to have some of his teammates continue faltering to get him hitting first, second, third, something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question, guys, and thanks for having me. I think, people on Twitter have asked, why is Akil Baddoo not batting at the top of the order? And I've kind of said, well, it's probably because he has 10 career hits, you know. This guy's still very new to the league. He's obviously been incredibly hot. But the other thing we're learning with Akil Baddoo is you can't really rule anything out. If he continues to hit like this, if he proves it sustainable for a little bit longer, I think he could absolutely ascend to the top of the order. The Tigers definitely aren't a loaded offensive team by any means. I think AJ Hinch really likes Robbie Grossman and his plate approach in that leadoff spot. But they've hit Willie Castro second a lot. Willie Castro's off to a slow start. You know, could they move up Jamer Candelario? Could they eventually squeeze Baddoo in there? You know, I don't think it's out of the question. At the same time, Baddoo is still going to have to earn consistent playing time. The Tigers, at least as of yesterday, have five outfielders on their roster, in part because of the jam Baddoo was created by playing so well. Nomar Mazara left the game with an abdominal strain, so we'll see if he hits the IL or not. But there is competition in the outfield. It seems like right now Badu's taking a lot of playing time away from Jacoby Jones. And really the thing Akil Baddoo's taught me over the past 2 months, you know, dating back to spring training, is that I don't know anything about baseball, because I didn't think this guy would be on the roster, and then I didn't think he would play, and it turns out he is just tearing up the league, and he's been so fun to follow.
It's just amazing, too, for a guy who last played in games at high A, he doesn't look like a rookie in his plate appearances. His pitch selection is really good. He just looks so comfortable in the box right now. Maybe that's part of it's just the hot streak, but I think that might just be who he is as a player to some degree. Let's talk about Matthew Boyd for a moment. Off to a good start early on. Strikeouts are down, but so are the walks. And you can't be frustrated with the results given where Boyd came from in the shortened season. What's been different and what's been working for him so far?
Yeah, it's been a pretty simple formula. It's been throwing strikes. Two outings ago, he threw first pitch strikes to, I believe, his first 18 batters. He threw first pitch strikes to 24 of 27 batters he faced. This week against the Astros, similar. He was just attacking the zone more than ever. He's changed his pitch mix. 2 years ago, Matt Boyd was very much fastball slider. He got off to a tremendous start, and then hitters were really able to sit on the fastball, or he left too many sliders over the plate. He led the league in home runs allowed. We're seeing him really evolve into more of a four-pitch pitcher, at least so far this season. He's using a lot of changeup, more so than the slider, and he's having success with it, mixing a little bit of a curveball too. So he's become more unpredictable. He hasn't allowed a home run yet, which is a big change of pace for Matthew Boyd. But it's another thing where it's like, okay, is this really sustainable? Boyd kind of has a history of really strong starts. His career ERA in March and April is below 3. If you go look at his ERA in other months, it's kind of ugly. His barrel rate almost seems unsustainable. He's not allowing very many barrels, like 1% to opposing hitters. It seems like he's due to get squared up a little bit more. His expected ERA is in the low 3s, where his actual ERA is, one point something. So there's a chance we see some regression. At the same time, Matthew Boyd's a guy who's already proven in his career he has really good stuff. He can be an effective and reliable pitcher if he can just be in the strike zone consistently, if he can not allow those center cut home run balls. So I think it's really as encouraging of a start as you could ask for Matthew Boyd. The big question, okay, we've seen this before. Can he do this for an entire season? And there's no way to know just yet.
Yeah, you mentioned the pitch mix, 28% on the slider, about 22% on the change, both okay. Up about 6 percentage points from last season. So encouraging to see him getting those pitches into his repertoire and leaning on them the way that he has early on this season. Casey Mize also off to a decent start this season. Absolutely electric in his last start, going up against an Astros team that has been among the hottest in baseball. And he shoved 7 shutout innings, 5 strikeouts. It's early, of course. We have to caveat almost everything we say at this point of the season with that. But given what we've seen from Mize this season, is there reason to believe that this is something that can continue for him too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this guy was a number one overall pick in 2018 for a reason. He has a top-tier talent. We've seen him. I mean, there's a guy who threw a no-hitter in his Double-A debut. I mean, the talent is there. For Mize, since he arrived in the big leagues, the question is, okay, can he really put all the pieces together? He struggled with that in his first 7 starts last year. He had a 6.99 ERA. There were times he would throw this wipeout splitter. I think he carried a no-hitter into the 6th against the White Sox one night. But he also just got rocked in several starts or had a tendency to kind of fall apart second, third time through the order. And early in spring training, Casey Mize really struggled. His fastball command was just not there. He's walked more hitters in 9 major league starts than he did his entire junior year at Auburn. We saw it in spring training to the point it was like, okay, is this guy even going to make the roster? Is he going to have to start in AAA? Because his command just wasn't there. He was getting behind in counts. And then late in spring, something clicked. I don't really know what it was. I don't know if it was mental. Mize hasn't talked much about any changes, but he started throwing strikes and he started really commanding what is a very deep and well-rounded arsenal. Against Houston, we saw him use the splitter a little differently. Now, in his post-game interview, he wouldn't quite admit to this, so I guess he doesn't want the rest of the league to know quite yet, but it's also all on video, so I'm going to go ahead and spill the secret. He's thrown the splitter in the strike zone a lot more, and it didn't have as much of that vertical dive. It was almost like an 88-mile-an-hour changeup, kind of running away from guys in the strike zone. And he threw, I think, like 25-plus splitters. He used it a lot. And rather than it being a swing and miss pitch, he induced a lot of weak contact with it. But he did that against a very good lineup. So we'll see if that continues to be the game plan going forward. I think what we've learned is that when Casey Mize can get ahead in counts, he's not a guy you want to face.
Cody, it really seems like the Tigers pitching staff as a whole is tweaking quite a bit with its approach. We're seeing it with Tarek Skubal, too. I know he's had back-to-back starts against Cleveland to begin the year. He gets Oakland tonight for his 3rd start of the season. What are your expectations for Skubal, looking at some of the early adjustments that he's made?
Yeah, Skubal had a rough outing last time against Cleveland after a really encouraging outing in his first start. He was lights out all spring training to the point I was like, this guy might have passed Casey Mize. He might have jumped him in his development. I've always kind of thought Skubal might have an even higher ceiling than Casey Mize. And then, I don't know, we saw him get roughed up a little bit in his last outing. His fastball velo was down. His spin rate on the fastball was down pretty significantly. We asked him about that after the game. He said, oh, I hadn't looked at the numbers. We talked to him about it yesterday. He said, no, I addressed it. Everything was fine. In my bullpen between starts, it's just kind of a matter of going out there, being aggressive on the mound. So we'll see if that's true. I think I view Skubal as a very aggressive pitcher. He likes to pump the zone with a fastball that on a good day is sitting around 96, 97. He's continued to hone his repertoire. He's got a very good slider. He's working on a splitter a la Casey Mize, but it's a new pitch. He's very much still developing it. I like Skubal's curveball. It probably pops out of the hand a little too much, but he started to mix that in a little bit more. So the Tigers have a first-year pitching coach in Chris Fetter. I think that's why we're seeing a lot of these tweaks, really trying to focus in on how guys can hone their arsenals. With Skubal and Mize, though, we're both seeing young pitchers who kind of have to get some of the basics right. Like, again, we're talking about just getting ahead in counts, and that's a thing for Skubal, too. His biggest weakness is he's just not always pitch efficient. He can run up his pitch counts where even when he's striking guys out through 5 innings, you know, he's kind of running out of gas or his pitch count's getting high for a young guy. I think Skubal has a really high ceiling, but let's keep an eye on his fastball tonight against the A's, because I think the fastball sets up everything for him. If it's down again, that's not good news. And if it's up, then he could have a really good outing.
A couple more youngsters we're excited to see for this team. Eventually, Isaac Paredes, Matt Manning. What's the plan for these guys? When do you think we could see them in a way that they are contributing to the level that would have us excited in the fantasy baseball world?
Yeah, we'll see. I think the Tigers really wanted Isaac Paredes to make the team out of camp. AJ Hinch loves him. They kind of gave him every opportunity. He was going to play 3rd. He was going to play 2nd. And when it came down to it, he just didn't quite hit enough. I think Paredes continues to pass the eye test. He looks great at the plate. He has a very disciplined approach, but he struggled to barrel balls up to kind of hit like he has throughout you know, high A and double A. He's never played in triple A because of the shutdown last year. He went straight to the majors in, you know, in the latter part of the 60 game season. And again, played really well at first, then kind of leveled off, struggled, almost got a little confused in his plate approach to where he started swinging and missing at first pitch strikes, like getting overly aggressive. I think there's a lot of potential for Paredes. I think the Tigers are just kind of one injury or one roster move away from him still being the guy who gets the call. In an ideal world, Paredes gets a few at-bats once the AAA season starts. But I think if he hits well at all, he could move to the big leagues quickly. And I'm talking within a month. And if he gets sent to the big leagues, they're going to send him there to play. AJ Hinch has shown a lot of lineup flexibility. So, you know, we'll see if he contributes to a point that merits him worth picking up in fantasy. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Paredes get a lot of at-bats, you know, in the early part of this summer, maybe at the latest. Now, Matt Manning is a little bit of a different case. He's a guy who has never pitched in AAA. Again, a really high ceiling pitching prospect. But he had a forearm strain last year that shut him down, so he didn't really throw at all at the alternate site. The Tigers were very careful with him in spring training. He pretty much only maxed out at two innings. He had a really nice spring training. I thought he looked much improved from where he was even a year ago. So I get the sense the plan is later in this season, I'm talking probably post All-Star break, maybe even into August, when it's time to scale back guys like Mize and Scooble because of maybe some innings limitations. And I don't know whether that means shutting him down or using him like we've seen with Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer, where they're like three-inning opener, super opener types. I don't know, but I think the plan is for Manning to get built up slowly and then enter the rotation in the later part of this summer and hopefully be a guy who can go 5-6 innings and give you some quality starts. I think there's a super high likelihood we see Manning in the majors this year as a starting pitcher. But some of it will also depend on how he throws in AAA. Is he going to come out and just dominate and really force his hand, or will he struggle a little bit? Manning can still get a little too fastball, curveball dependent at times. So I think some innings in AAA will really benefit him.
Yeah, Tigers a little friskier, I think, than a lot of us expected to start the season. Definitely giving us plenty to talk about in the fantasy baseball world. That's Cody Stavenhagen, our Tigers beat reporter here at The Athletic. Cody, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, DVR, let's move on to the second half of our show here on this Thursday edition of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Our colleague, our fantasy friend, our good real-life buddy, our beer savant, Eno Saris, wrote a great column earlier this week about the early returns on the effects of the new ball that we've seen in Major League Baseball. It's a very interesting read. Go and check it out if you haven't. What I love that Eno has a real knack for doing is taking something like this and bringing in all the physics of it, but making it understandable. He distills it to all of us so we can understand just exactly what's going on. It seemed like the early the reports are basically that it's too early for us to draw any real conclusions about how this could be actionable in the fantasy baseball world. But there are some interesting reports that we're getting from it and some interesting data that we can take out of it. And I would say at the very least, it gives us something to look for, to watch the next couple of weeks, the next 4 weeks, where then maybe we can draw some conclusions, especially as the weather warms up in the rest of the country outside of the Southeast. So when you were reading that column, what did you take away from it from a fantasy perspective?
I think there's one section that is stuck in my mind right now, so I'm going to give that away on the stream, on the show, and people can read the rest of the article for more details. But the difference with the parks that have humidors versus the ones that don't, this is what really struck me. There are 10 parks right now that are using humidors: Mariners, Mets, Red Sox, Rockies, Diamondbacks, and reportedly Astros, Marlins, Cardinals, Rangers, Blue Jays. And you have lower barrel rates in those parks and lower average exit velocities in those parks, which to me means those environments would be more pitcher friendly going forward, right? Like, you take whatever the park factors were, make them even more pitcher friendly than they previously were based on what's happening with the ball and with the humidor kind of working together. Now, how aggressive would you be with that? I think it's probably still more on the margins because it's so early, but it's streaming opportunities, right? It's looking at pitchers that might be a little bit fringy in those places in a difficult matchup and saying, actually, maybe Luke Weaver at home against the Padres is viable to use when we're looking at this information, right? Maybe we can throw Kwang-Yun Kim at home against the Dodgers this year. Like, there's a couple things in there that you might do differently if these early trends hold up. Like, that to me seemed like the most actionable possible way to approach what we've seen so far from the ball.
Yeah, I think that hits it right on the head because we're talking about very early returns. We're talking about April data, so weather is going to be a factor. And then we're talking about also things that even writ large are maybe not going to have the greatest impacts that trickle all the way down to the fantasy game to where you're thinking about things on a start-by-start basis. I think they have some potential real major impacts for the real life game, and we're going to see that play out over the course of the season. But for the fantasy game, it's really hard to draw a straight line from this to that and get us something that we can really use as we are, you know, making claims or making trades or deciding, do I start this guy? Do I not start this guy? I think the point you make about, you know, a Luke Weaver versus the Padres at home, it's those sorts of moves that are going to be the ones that are most influenced by this new ball, at least from what we've seen thus far. So do go and check out Eno's column. It's a great story. Really gets into the weeds of this and gives you a lot of things to look for, again, especially as the weather heats up. We're going to do a new thing on every Thursday episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Maybe not every single one, but certainly as the opportunities present. I don't want to back us into any corner and be like, oh man, we got to figure this out this week. Why did I say that way back on April 15th? Like, what did I do to us? We're going to do it on a lot of episodes. Basically, when the opportunity presents itself, we're going to play a little game of, is this real? And it's going to be easier early in the season with, you know, so much data still to be presented to us as the year goes on. We're going to have a lot of opportunities to wonder if what we're seeing is something we can buy or if, you know, there's a little bit of a small sample size happening and if it's something we want to fade. So, Derek, for you, I did this one for you. Our first edition of Is This Real? I had you in mind, my friend, and I said, what would Derek want to talk about? Maybe he would want to talk about Chris Bryant and the power rebound that we've seen from the Cubs' third baseman this season. So our first edition of Is This Real is going to focus on Chris Bryant's power rebound that we've seen in 2021. Now, obviously, you can see this Cubs thing over my shoulder, so just let me have this for a second because the Cubs have been terrible and even worse to watch than you would think just by looking at their bottom line numbers. So let me at least have a little something here. Chris Bryant's power has been the one bright spot for this offense during the season. He's hitting only .243, but he does have a .595 slugging percentage. Three homers, you're seeing him jump up to a 21.4% home run to fly ball ratio. So a lot of balls that he is hitting in the air are sailing over the fences. And it's just, it's looked right. You know, Chris Bryant back in his MVP season wasn't necessarily a guy who, you know, drove the ball 450, 460 feet with these just eye-popping Statcast numbers. It just looks right. He looks more like Chris Bryant this year than he has at any point since he first injured his shoulder a couple of seasons ago. The Statcast numbers, they're fine. They're really admittedly not great. He's got an average exit velocity. It puts him in the 54th percentile. Max exit velocity in the 69th. His barrel rate is 82nd, and that's another thing that Eno really gets into in that column. 82nd percentile. It's good. It's not great, certainly. Hard hit, 75th percentile, and his expected slugging, 66th percentile. So they're all fine numbers. I don't think any of them really, though, jump off the page at you. So with what you've seen, with what the numbers have presented to you, and I know, Derek, Cubs and Brewers have played each other quite a bit already this season, so I'm sure you've seen plenty of Chris Bryant in real time. The power rebound, is it real?
I think the power rebound is actually real with Chris Bryant. A lot of it comes down to health with him. He seems to be healthy. He just got his first day of the season off yesterday. It was a day game following a night game, and the Cubs got shut out because their offense is bad. Like, I'm not just saying that to rub it in. Like, they're bad, and man, Javier Baez looks broken right now. I don't know what it's going to take to reset him, to fix him. I didn't think what we saw in the shortened season, what we were going to get, I thought there was actually bounce back potential with him, but that's another topic for another time, I guess. With Bryant, I think the bigger question for me, like, the power rebound seems real. I think he can hit 25 to 30 home runs again. I don't have any concerns about that. Maybe he gets traded midseason, ends up in a more hitter-friendly environment. That could give him a power boost too. Who is he as a hitter, though? Because we saw the K rate jump for him in the shortened season. He was up 27.2%. It's the highest he'd been since his rookie year way back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And he's still sitting at 25% here early on. Again, we're dealing with two series and against the Pirates and the Brewers. And the Brewers right now, their top three in their rotation is just nasty for right-handed hitters to deal with. So you can't read too much into that K rate given the small sample size and the schedule itself. I'm wondering, though, if Bryant's power comes back, are we getting 280 plus the great OBP and the power? Or are we getting more like 240, 250 with a really nice OBP and the power? Because there's a pretty big difference there. A 240, 250 guy that hits 25 to 30 home runs, still a good fantasy player. But if he does it while hitting 270 or 280, that's a full bounce back or nearly a full bounce back from Bryant. And that makes him the kind of guy that is a massive difference maker relative to his draft day price. So I guess I'm not totally sold yet on the batting average coming back up to the previous Chris Bryant high-end levels, but I think if you're worried about power before, he's shown enough early on to ease a lot of those concerns.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think that it's more in the 270 range. You know, like you said, the Cubs have, you know, the Pirates in those series, you would expect it a little bit more from this offense, but they've seen Brandon Woodruff twice. They've seen, they saw Corbin Burns. They saw Freddie Peralta. Like, they've faced some pretty tough matchups in those, in the Milwaukee series. The Cubs are not going to be the only team that struggles in a series where they face Woodruff, Burns, Peralta. And that does not excuse their struggles against other pitchers. It certainly doesn't excuse their offensive struggles against Pittsburgh, but there are going to be plenty of other teams who have their hands full when they go up against any of those Milwaukee starters, let alone all three of them. I think the OBP is locked in for Chris Bryant. He's at an 11.4% walk rate this year. He has his career low in walk rate is 8.2%. That was in the shortened season. In a normal season, his career low in walk rate is 10.5%. The guy's going to give you plenty of OBP. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm with you that this power bounce back feels real. I mean, just go back to the 2018 season. So many people want to act as though that home run, that MVP season stands alone. And it was a little bit of an outlier compared with the rest of his career. But in 2019, this was when he was fully recovered from that shoulder injury, 31 homers, 108 runs scored, 77 RBIs. This is a year he spent mostly leading off for the Cubs, 282, 382, 521. I think that there's a good reason to believe that that is still the real Chris Bryant as he is here, sitting here in his age 29 season. So I don't think we're going to see necessarily, I wouldn't bet on 285. I wouldn't bet on anything like that. That's really never completely been Chris Bryant's game. He's more of a 270, 275 guy. Big walk rate's going to push him to a 375 to 380 OBP. And then the 25 to 30 homers can get him, you know, into the 510 to 520 slugging percentage range. And I think that's ultimately where he ends up this season. He's going to be in the trade rumors. If the Cubs keep playing like this, you're going to hear him. You're going to hear Craig Kimbrell all season long as being guys who are mentioned in trade discussions. But Chris Bryant's been part of the trade rumor mill for like 3 years now. He is used to it. I think it bothered him at one point, but he has clearly gotten past that. And the fact that he is the one Cub who is hitting right now, hitting for power, drawing walks, I feel like he is the one guy on this team who I feel is in a good place. And so I do want to buy in on Chris Bryant. And the fact that he has, you know, a 240 batting average, it feels like he's gettable right now. I think you could probably go out and trade for him. I'm not saying you're going to be able to get him for 80 cents on the dollar, but with what we've seen in the first two plus weeks of the season, I feel pretty good about Chris Bryant being back. And so he is someone who I would be at least maybe having some trade discussions about and seeing what the price might be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the projections, the public-facing projections over at FanGraphs, and the most optimistic projections are from Derek Carty's system, the bat. 261 for the average, 361 OBP, 486 slug. Really nice player. 28 home runs the rest of the way. I'd give him 31 for the season. So
that's fair.
I don't, no arguments against that. I mean, I think that's a reasonable sort of expectation for him going forward.
Yeah. So it's real. It's real. The Chris Bryant, our first edition of Is This Real? We're getting, I think, a unanimous yes. The Chris Bryant power rebound is real. And again, I just feel like there might be a window here to go acquire him because of the low batting average, because of how just dreadful the Cubs have been as a whole. He's hitting cleanup, so, and he doesn't have that like shiny leadoff man thing going for him. He's not going to steal a ton of bases. I do think that there's an opportunity to go get him right now and before the price maybe really explodes if he is able to keep this up. For what it's worth, Cubs have a very tough next couple of weeks. Braves, Mets, Brewers, Dodgers, and Reds, the next five or six series, because they've got two with the Braves for the Cubs. So a lot of good pitching coming in the Cubs' direction. They do not play on Thursday, however, an off day for the Cubs on Thursday, but still a whole lot on the MLB slate for Thursday. Derek, what is catching your eye as we get ready for a day with games that start in, what, like half an hour here? What are you looking for?
Yeah, so this one will be at least mostly wrapped up by the time people hear the show, if they're listening to the podcast version. But Trevor Rogers against the Braves, I talked about it on Rates and Barrels. Mm-hmm. He was a tough weekly lineup decision for me this week because he looked so good against the Mets last time out. He's a young pitcher that I really believed in. I sat him down in a few leagues because I don't mess with that Braves lineup. It's one of the better lineups in the league. I think when you have a still unproven pitcher, even though we're talking about an exciting unproven pitcher, you want to err on the side of caution when you can. But still important for me to see how he handles that lineup. If he gets knocked around a bit, can he bounce back? Can he make adjustments? You know, those are important questions for Trevor Rogers to answer, regardless of what the final line ends up being in this matchup. But I brought him up with Cody Stavenhagen too. Tarek Skubal against Oakland. He mentioned the velocity being down last time out. Sometimes that's a mechanical issue. Sometimes it's something else. Hopefully it was just a mechanical issue that has been, in fact, cleaned up between starts. I think with Skubal, I saw a lot of what Cody saw, where I saw a guy that this spring looked like he was ready to sort of pick up where he left off in the minors, where he was just untouchable at every single stop. I know home runs were the problem for him in the shortened season. So I just want to see how he fares against an Oakland lineup that I think you can pick on with just about any pitcher this season. I mean, anybody that you'd think about rostering, you should be comfortable throwing against Oakland. So hopefully it's a big bounce back performance from Skubal tonight.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one to watch. And just on the other side of Trevor Rogers in that game against Atlanta, you're looking at Ian Anderson. So not only a fun matchup tonight, but we could be talking about that as an at least headlining matchup for years to come. Or not tonight, yeah, that's one of the early ones. That's a 12:10 Eastern start. So we're looking at that one kicking off soon. Excited to watch that game as well. Something I'm going to be watching today, and this is the second game of the doubleheader between the Mariners and the Orioles. Marco Gonzalez, I mean, DVR, he's got to get it going. He really has to get it going. Two dreadful starts to begin the season for Marco Gonzalez. And you know, this was someone who had a pretty good shortened season, maybe the best season of his career. You know, definitely as far as the statistics went, I say maybe just because, you know, do you trust it over 11 starts versus what he did the year before? A pretty decent year over 34 starts. The numbers were great last season, a 3.10 ERA, a 3.32 FIP, a 3.76 xERA. Like, everything said that what he did last year was fully earned, but he has been knocked around to the tune of a 10.45 ERA in his first 10 and one-thirds innings this season. And if he doesn't do it today against this Orioles lineup that has basically been what we expected them to be, which is not very good, if he can't get it done against the Orioles in this game today, I think he's the cut candidate. I think I would feel comfortable letting him go if he struggles again against the Orioles. If he pitches very well, I'm willing to say, all right, slow start to the season, but he's back on track. If he pitches okay, then he's still on my cut watch list. But this is, I think, you know, a sort of a proving day for Marco Gonzalez. If things go sideways for him, I have him on one team, and he will definitely be someone who will not be on that team if he can't get it done against the Orioles. Where are you on what you've seen from Marco Gonzalez thus far?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. He's not a guy that relies on premium velocity in the first place, so a little drop in fastball velo doesn't move the needle much for me. The pitch mix is a little different. Fewer cutters this year from Gonzalez early on. A little surprised to see that adjustment, but he still throws four pitches, has good command. I think this is just what you get with a guy that doesn't have overpowering stuff. You have stretches where he's extremely hittable when he's missing his spots. When he gets locked back in, you can get back to that high threes ERA, kind of decent whip that we are accustomed to. I mean, I think he pitched at a level in the shortened season that was just way out of reach for him over a regular length season. So I passed on him throughout draft season. I thought there was too much recency bias steeped into his draft day price. If he gets cut in some shallow mixed leagues, he's still rosterable to me in formats like that, but it's probably more as a two-start week sort of guy. Maybe it, you know, if he has a favorable stretch of schedule, I'd pick him up and hold on to him for a couple of turns in the rotation. But the strikeout rate has always been so low from him that I've always been skeptical of him as a shallow mixed league sort of guy.
Gonna have to get things going against the Orioles, or it's cut bait time for Marco Gonzalez. Let's look ahead to the weekend before we wrap things up in this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. DVR, something you're looking forward to this weekend? Actually, I'm not even gonna let it be open ended because this was one that I thought about and I knew one of us would say it. I am very excited for this first Sonny Gray start. Excited to see what he's got. Everything sounds good coming out of Cincinnati. I think this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, with Sonny Gray, I've got him a lot of places. The walk rate, I think, is the thing you're most worried about when you look at him over the last couple of seasons. It was a problem for him during his time with the Yankees. It was a problem for him in the shortened season as the year unfolded. He got off to such a great start last year before the wheels sort of fell off on him late. But the K's have been there. He seems very comfortable in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the back seems to be healed at this point. I've got him a lot of places. I think there are plenty of people who've been burned by Sonny Gray in the past, and that, to me, made him a little bit of an earlier round bargain, kind of in the group of SP2s or early SP3s in some cases. So I'm here for it. I want to see how he looks in his first start out this year.
Yeah, let me just verify that for you. I have him in Top Wars. I was picking 11th. And I got him in the, I want to say sixth, but it might have been the seventh round that I got Sonny Gray, picking from the 11th spot. So, I mean, I jumped all over that when that was presented to me. So I'm very excited to get him back on that team and to see what he's got in this start. I'm taking a look this weekend, DVR, at this right here. Padres bats versus the Dodgers. Things are lined up in such a way that we are going to get almost certainly, at least. I don't know if the Dodgers have confirmed this, but this is the way it's lined up. Walker Buehler on Friday, Clayton Kershaw on Saturday, Trevor Bauer on Sunday against these Padres bats. Maybe Fernando Tatis makes his return to the Padres this weekend as well. I hope he does, assuming that the shoulder is all good. But this is what we want in this NL West, right? We want these two teams going at it, and the fact that This is the first time they're playing this season, right? They haven't met yet, all right? And so first time, first series, and it lines up where it's Buehler, Kershaw, Bauer against this Padres offense. Really nothing to say from a fantasy perspective other than it's going to be a whole lot of fun, especially if Fernando Tatis gets back into the lineup for San Diego. So obviously this is the marquee series of the weekend. This is the headline series of the weekend. That would be true no matter who was starting for LA. But the fact that it's those three starters makes this a whole lot of fun. Really quick before we go, is there anything that you're looking for, particularly on San Diego's side? Like, is there anything that you want to see from any of these hitters against this top-level competition they're going to face this weekend?
Less with the bats, more with Ryan Weathers. I know he's not going to pitch deep into the game because he's been working out of the bullpen, but he's going to start the opener of this series on Friday. I mean, we're talking about a left-handed guy that debuted in the postseason last year and looks really good. I think Denelson Lamet's going to take that spot in the rotation once he's healthy enough. Weathers shifts back to the pen. I just want to see how he handles himself against is probably the league's best lineup, or at least the league's deepest lineup, because that's a great test. Even if he's only going to go through the lineup one time, how does Ryan Weathers fare trying to get through those first few innings against the Dodgers? So I think he's one of the guys that I'm really most curious about. I guess just seeing how Sung Kim continues to adjust if he's playing this weekend and Tatis isn't, I think that's another thing that I want to keep a close eye on. I want to see if there's any reason to be excited about him, even as a semi-regular once Tatis eventually gets back.
Great weekend of baseball ahead with that series. And hey, in the American League, Twins and Angels could be a whole lot of offense in that one as well. So we are looking forward to that. And that will do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Those of you who are here on YouTube watching, those of you listening later, thank you as well for doing that. And if you're still looking for a subscription to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. Get yourself a subscription for just $3.99 a month. For Derek Van Riper, Aaron Gleeman, and Cody Stavenhagen, I am Michael Beller. DVR and I back with you on Sunday right here live again as we break down the weekend of Fab and waivers coming our way. Until then, have a great day and enjoy all the baseball coming your way on Thursday and over the weekend.